Lecture 19, Grade 3 Conference, The Old Testament, Part 3. I want to speak now a little bit about the very first book of the Hebrew Scriptures, Genesis, and particularly about the 7 days of creation. On the whole, teachers spend far too much time on this part of the Hebrew Scriptures. They go over the stories day by day in great detail. They have the children paint the 7 days of creation very often on dry paper, so the children have their first sort of veil painting-like experience. And this also takes a considerable amount of time. We'll see samples of this sort of thing as well as drawings that the children have done. And I have seen teachers taking an entire 3-week block, that is 14 or 15 classes on these 7 days of creation. This is absolutely not necessary. The stories in Genesis are not the important stories for the third grader. I'm not saying they are not important, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be told. I mean, what would we do without things like the fall, which is very important, and Cain and Abel and Noah and so on. Very, very important stories. However, these are stories that really have to do with humanity as a whole. We will find stories about murderous brothers and fratricide as we learn about other cultures. We will learn about great floods. We will learn about human beings falling away from the dictates of God. All of these are certainly archetypes that live through all of humanity. But the Hebrew Scriptures themselves, what they really have to give the child in the deepest and most powerful sense, this does not begin until the story of Abraham. That is where the stories really begin. We might say that Genesis is a bit like a looking back for the child to early childhood, to that time where one is born out of chaos and begins to come into form. In fact, we will also see how certain anthroposophical researchers have remarkably and beautifully connected the 7 days of creation to the stages of embryogenesis. Very interesting picture to be given. And I think, again, for those of you who wish to go more deeply, this might be something good to look into this summer to help you understand what's going on when you teach Genesis. But where the third grader begins is with the story of Abraham. And I'll go into much greater detail about this in subsequent lectures. So I would say the most that you should spend on all of the stories, all the way from the creation to the flood, would be 3 weeks. Finish the story of Genesis in those 3 weeks, because you have far more essential stories for the third graders to tell them. And this would be Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, finally up till Moses. And you definitely want to get up to the stories of Moses and to the death of Moses by the time you come to Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever, winter vacation. Spending too much time on Genesis sort of begins a path which is very hard to overcome, and you keep falling behind and falling behind, and it means that you sometimes have to leave out some of the most essential stories in order to get through the whole thing. So really watch yourself. I will be giving you advice about how to schedule your year. I already have, but I would say again, even though it may be a tradition in your school, even though maybe the children are expecting it, you are not doing them a service by spending forever and ever and ever on the story of the 7 days of creation. Secondly, do not turn your study of the 7 days of creation into a comparative religion course. You do not have to compare Genesis to the Babylonian creation story, the Enuma Elish. You don't have to compare it to the various creation stories of Native American tribes, or to the creation stories of the ancient Chinese, or anything like that. That can all come later when they're specifically learning about those cultures in grade 4 and 5, or just brought in as part of world literature in the uppermost grades. It's not necessary, and if anything, it can even confuse the children who in grade 3 are really looking for solid ground on which to stand. And that's one of the most salient points about the Old Testament stories, that, you know, with this very, very strong, centralized, monotheistic God figure who is presented there, this is like balm in Gilead for the third grader, knowing that such a being is there before them, and that they're going to hear stories about people falling away from him and being drawn back again and again. This is very satisfying and a very powerful experience for the children. Now, a couple of other things as a preface to the stories themselves. As I mentioned before, nowadays many children have not been exposed to these stories before they hear about them from you. That's okay. Unfortunately, many of you have not been exposed to these stories before you heard about them from me. That's not very good, I assure you. So they don't live in you the way they used to live in people. You know, you think that basically for a long, long time that people who were literate began to learn to read via the Bible. The first book produced on a printing press was the Bible. The first books that monks began to write by hand in the Dark Ages were Bibles. So all of this is lived strongly in the collective etheric body of the Western world. And it lives profoundly in the speeches of Abraham Lincoln. It sparkles, it coruscates brilliantly in the speeches of Martin Luther King. And now it's getting lost. One only hears it in the most punitive way from the mouths of very often kind of fanatical preachers, which is not the way we want to present this to the children at all. So, number one, when controversies arise, we can tell people, how can we understand Shakespeare, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King? How can we learn to understand what the greatest of our public figures have spoken in the past, the greatest of our writers have drawn their stories from in the past, unless we understand the stories of the Hebrew Scriptures? So, you know, even if people are atheistical or fanatically opposed to any kind of mention of religion in a public school, I think you've got plenty of justification for teaching it. But also, this is justification for you trying to penetrate these stories themselves. So this is what I would say. If you are really unfamiliar with these stories, and you know, you recognize the names like Noah and Abraham, but that's about it. This is what you should do. Tomorrow, go to the library or go to a bookstore and pick up something like the Golden Children's Bible, you know, a big illustrated Bible meant for 7 to 9-year-olds. Start with that, because the people who write these things are often excellent at summarizing. They give you a kind of feeling about, you know, the sort of direction, even the language that you may use when you teach your own children. And they address you like a child who doesn't know anything. And that's good, because you don't. In terms of the Old Testament, this is brand new. So go into it, first of all, that way. Secondly, find some good literary retellings. You're not going to find a literary retelling of the entire corpus of the Hebrew Scriptures, but there are good starts written by Walter de la Mare, the wonderful English poet, Eleanor Fergion, another fine English poet, the American, the first woman, I believe, to win a Nobel Prize for Literature, at least the first American woman, Pearl Buck, also did a very nice retelling. So that would be your second step, to read now on more of an adult level, people giving more of the nuances and the subtleties of the stories. And last but not least, no later than August, start to read the Hebrew Scriptures yourself. I would strongly suggest the King James Version. I would strongly suggest that that's what you quote from, and perhaps that's also what you will be reading from with your class. It is not the most accurate. Many a critic has had quite a time with the often quirky translations of Hebrew terms that are used there. Rudolf Steiner was very critical of it. All that is true. On the other hand, it is that book, which is one of the great landmarks of English poetry. And that is the book that inspired many of the greatest writers in the English language. So it has its own life in a certain way. Nothing wrong with looking at the American Standard Version, at the Revised Version. There are, you know, dozens of versions out now. And also perhaps go to a temple, a synagogue, and see if you can get hold of an English translation that's approved then by Jewish scholars and rabbis. Look at a number of versions, but whatever you do, come to know those stories. Read it for yourself. Live into it. Just try to get a feeling for how human beings are presented as they stand before the divine world on the one hand, the earthly world on the other, and what are they going to do with all of this and about all of this. And this will take you deeply, deeply into the soul and spirit of the third grader, the child before you. But don't walk into your class in September or late August, whenever you begin, with a kind of Cliff's Notes background in this book. That would be doing your class a terrible disservice. More than anything that you have taught before, even the fairy tales, more than anything that you will teach in the future, even the stories from the New Testament, when you perhaps venture to tell about the life of Jesus in grade 6, more than any of those, you have to have something of the Hebrew Scriptures really living within you, something that is permeating at least a little bit of your etheric body. If you're going to teach this to third graders, they will be able to tell right away if this is real to you, if it's living within you. So this is a huge mandate. I certainly recognize it. You might feel, why are you telling me this now? Why am I telling it to you now? Why didn't you sign up for the third grade conference 3 years ago, you know, when you knew you were going to teach it at some point? We both, in a certain way, are a little bit late at all of this. So I'm giving you a kind of triage treatment here, an emergency room, telling you that it's now or never. And make that, you know, your number one priority this summer, to be reading that book and working with that book. And I can assure you, over the course of the year, you too will be able to empathetically, sympathetically, deeply go through a recapitulation of your own 9-year change and a understanding, going along with the 9-year-old change of your classroom. If this book is living within you, that will happen. So it really is a very big transformative experience. You probably experienced the fairy tales in class one were, the saint stories, maybe even the fables in grade two. Certainly had a transformative effect on your nature, but nothing can come close to what these stories can do. And now, as I promised, we will go into the actual content for several more lectures.